I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a Frank podcast.
Kia ora, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Wellington Paranormal, the podcast. With me, Mike Minogue.
And me, Karen O'Leary.
Good times. This one here, we're going to be talking today to Mark Mitchinson, who is a bloody great man. And what an interesting life he had, O'Leary.
Whew. Indeed. Are we saying that, like, but we haven't talked to him yet, because are we just introducing it now?
No, we've already talked to
him. We know we've talked to him. Yeah, we've already talked to him. And what an interesting guy he is. What a life he's led.
He's an incredible life. I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation, and he did too, which was great. Yeah, he was really pleased with that yarn. He was texting me later on the evening.
He didn't text me.
No, well, it's probably because he hasn't got your number.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that would be part of it. Yeah, I first worked with him on a film called Rage. Very, very good actor. And I knew that he'd come to acting sort of late, but that he'd had a history maybe many years before, and but there was a big gap. But quite...
What an interesting history.
What a great history. But we'll save that. We'll save all of that, and we're just going to get straight into it, because it is quite a long yarn, this one. It's over an hour.
Oh, it was worth every minute of it.
It was bloody beautiful. So we'll have a chat to you afterwards, all right? Okay?
Yeah, right.
All right then, see ya.
Yeah, bye.
Hi. Bye. Well, here we are.
Oh, what a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. It's been a long time.
It has.
We're just discussing when was the last time we saw each other.
Yes.
You were...
Well, I've got vague recollections, but they're very... No, I know I saw you because yes. I was excited about that.
Yeah.
I just don't know where or when or why, but I feel like we were somewhere where they were potentially serving alcohol.
Potentially. That would be a surprise
and
to
I
both of us.
Like we were both enjoying maybe a beverage or
yes,
two.
Yes, I think it might have been possibly Wellington.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time at all. I think it's been ages.
It's been way too long.
Yeah.
Me and you.
Yeah. A long, long time. Yeah. I remember... You must have been filming a job in Wellington. Well, the first time we met was on Rage.
Yeah, that's
right.
That'd
be right?
Yeah.
Which was Danny Mulheron directed about apartheid, a little apartheid number. That was my second ever acting job, that.
And we were getting the I was getting the cop who got all the, you know, the protesters off the field.
That's right.
Actually cancelled the...
Cancelled the game.
The game, yeah.
That's right. This was based on the Springbok tour in 81.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was, we had a good time.
Yeah, we did.
I feel like we had a few beers. It was you as police officers. We had a few scenes together.
We did, yeah.
I had a moustache in that one, a ginger moustache, much like the one I've got today.
Yeah.
You're very good in that too, if I remember.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was.
I enjoyed it.
In the ginger moustache or in his role as a police officer?
Like,
look, it's me.
I actually had a massive haircut like I do in the latest, in season two of Paranormal as well. It was big hair. And it was you, me, and John Landreth.
That's right.
The wonderful John Landreth.
One, yeah, who's now in this new show about to start.
Is he?
Yeah. Damn.
Is he?
Yes.
Well,
since his accident, the first show since his accident, so it's kind of...
Can you update me on him? Now, John Landreth is, he's much like you, he's got a great voice on him. He's got a great presence. You know John Landreth?
No.
He's fabulous actor.
Magnificent.
Yeah, really great.
He had a fall in his house, didn't
he? Yeah, he did in the evening and broke his back. Oh. Terrible, terrible accident.
I couldn't remember what it was, whether he'd hit his head on a, fallen over and hit his head on a coffee table or something along
I
those
don't
lines.
Know all the details, but I just know that it rendered him unable to walk and put him in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And the recovery has been pretty remarkable, I think. And now he's in a show with Bree Peters. And
how do you spell his last name?
L-A-N-D-R-E-T-H.
Yeah, and Tom Sainsbury.
Well, I haven't been on Facebook for years, and that was where I'd sort of see updates on
missing,
him.
You're missing so
I'm
much.
I'm missing so much. It's the local village, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I haven't been up to date. So is he up and about?
Well, he's still in the wheelchair, but he's writing and he's, you know, he's being...
Oh, so he's in that show.
Yes.
What's it called?
I know.
Oh, it's got a great name.
Yeah, it's a really clever name.
We're just not clever enough to remember it.
No.
Something
about being in a wheelchair. We'll find out.
Yep.
I know. And we'll
oh, that's great. Yeah. So he's back at it.
Yes, he is back at it.
That's so good. Yeah,
so that's a real... bonus for everyone.
Yeah, he's a magnificent human. No, you and I had a good time on that, and with him, we had a few beers.
We did.
If I remember correctly, you were staying up at Tom Scott's during the filming of that. Would that be right? Were you in a downstairs apartment?
If not staying there, spending a lot of time.
You're spending a lot of time.
Because, you know.
I remember some great yarns. It was you marching around with Danny Mulheron in a headlock, which is one of my favourite stories.
The place where he the most deserving of the headlock, I believe, Danny Mulheron. That and a gag.
And then I think after that you were down in Wellington and you had a place, you were staying in a high-rise apartment somewhere and there was a party.
Yeah, that's right.
And my now wife, Zara, we turned up
Zara.
And it was quite the shindig.
Yeah, you know. Me and McLaren. It's like, whose idea was to put us two together
in the
universe?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at these two.
Yeah, so that was certainly when I remember seeing you last. But, yeah, we don't see each other often enough, that's for sure. But we start all of these podcasts, don't we, O'Leary?
We do start them.
With a question.
Should we ask the question?
Go on then.
This is it's a pretty big question, Mark. So, I mean, feel free to take your time. Okay. Just do consider it and think about how you want to answer it because we've had some pretty amazing answers in the past. And the question we've got for you, Mark, is why acting?
Well, when you've had as many careers as I've had, you come to this old station that comes at the end of the tracks.
That was
showing off.
That was a question that was inserted by Potty Jake.
Well, it's quite. I tell you what, though, there is a story to it because, in the beginning, you know, before the sun came up, I was at drama school in London. So I'd always thought to myself,
Were you born in the UK and then came to New Zealand?
That's correct, yeah. I was born in the UK and came here when I was seven.
What were your parents up to?
Dad was an Anglican priest.
Ah.
And Mum was a teacher.
Right.
Yeah.
And was the idea to come down here and spread the good word?
Well.
Or just to get out of?
The guy who he'd worked, just get out of jail. the guy who brought us over was a guy called Jim Greenaway, who they'd worked together in a parish in Banbury in Oxfordshire.
Right.
And so he was a New Zealander and he came back and he said, look, why don't we start this whole kind of thing in Rotorua, a parish that, you know, the priest would work together and serve the community and do that kind of stuff. And Paul Reeves was the bishop of Waiapu at that time. And so we got invited to come over. It was that or Slough.
Paul Reeves.
That was a governor general. But
yeah.
Not the same Paul Reeves.
No, it is the same Paul Reeves. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So yes. The Paul Reeves, before he was governor general, was bishop of Waiapu.
Oh, yeah.
So the Reeves family, we're quite close to the Reeves family and the girls. Yeah, so we came over 76.
The year I was born, yeah.
Crazy. Rotorua.
But then you went back to England to go to drama
school.
So then I went back to England
in 82 when I was 16. And,
wow.
And I was, you know, I was the kind of the surf guy, the weird kind of long jacket guy from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Who everybody like took the piss out of, which is quite funny, you know. It's kind of, you know, because I was going back. We went back to the place that we'd actually left, which is Banbury, Oxfordshire. So, you know, 8 years had gone. So all the people I'd gone to school with are now at high school.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was kind of weird. But
and you went back as a family.
Yeah. And then I applied for the National Youth Theatre, got into that, and then applied for drama school, Guildhall School of Music and Drama, so got into that.
And where was the acting thing born? What was it that made you go?
I think I acted at school and done all that kind of thing. You know, even at Selwyn, we were big at Selwyn College. I went to Selwyn College, and that was quite a big drama thing going on there. And
any inspirations from film? Like, what were the films? Was it film or was it more theatre?
It was always film with me. I'd always, I was a kind of film buff, you know, and loved all those kind of, you know, all the kind of heroes you'd expect. Brando, Pacino, you know, all the big guys. But also, I loved all those character, English character actors like Freddie Jones, you know, and those guys who were kind of, you know, Brad Dourif and those, you know, those kind of, those actors who were just, they weren't brilliantly well known, but they were always great in great roles. And I thought, you know, so the character thing was much more my thing. And so when I went to drama school in London, it was the time of sort of, it was that kind of posh boy school time, you know, so it was a lot of the films like, you know, the Merchant Ivory films.
Right.
So I kind of was there when it was just like, you know, and I wasn't Merchant Ivory kind of, you know, hello, sir. What time do you call this? Oh, Perry, come in from the cold. So it was, and, you know, 5 years later, it was the same group, you know, the same drama school produced Ewan McGregor and Trainspotting and all those guys, which would have been, you know. So I kind of had a tricky time at drama school and came out of it and thought, oh, fuck this.
Right.
I can't be doing this. I can't be waiting for the phone call and doing all that. So I completely gave it up and went off and did various other things.
Like what?
Yeah.
Well, like I started writing a book.
How's that going?
Yeah, it's still going really well. No, well, it's a series of interviews with actors and directors involved in politics.
Right.
So it's quite sweet. So I interviewed Susan Sarandon and David Putnam and Spike Lee and all these kind of, you know.
And,
so
yeah. And what year were you doing the book?
I know. They're all sitting in a drawer at home. It's like Martin Sheen. I mean, I spent 3 days with Martin Sheen in LA.
How old were you when you were doing this?
22.
How did they?
I just hustled.
Wow. Well, talk me through the hustle there.
Actually, what it started was I was working in a restaurant called Melange in Endell Street. In Covent Garden, and I met this woman, and we got talking. And I was saying, oh, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to America, and I've got this idea for a book, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, well, I know Ed Asner, you know, as in Lee Grant. And she goes, like, yeah, he's a good friend of mine, and you should get in contact with him. And so Ed was really the kind of instrumental, you know, person to get me all these other interviews.
He was like the
gateway. He was the gateway because he was head of the union. He was really and we got on like a house on fire. So, and he was performing Born Yesterday, which is a play, Carson Greer, I think his name is, and on Broadway. And he said, look, meet me at the theatre, we'll go to his hotel, and we chatted and did the interviews. And I remember the first night, it was the first night of his play, and I was in the dressing room with him just having a chat, and he was going, and then I heard this, oh my God, Lou, you were magnet. And it was fucking Audrey Hepburn. I was like, it's fucking Audrey Hepburn. Oh God, you're so marvelous, Lou. So Ed was kind of, you know, he was really well respected.
Yeah.
And it just gave me a free pass, you know, to those people. So Susan Sarandon was like, yep. And Martin Sheen was brilliantly helpful. And then I came back to the UK and did.
Was he in the program by that stage, Martin Sheen?
Yeah. He was all no beers to be had with Martin.
Yeah.
And quite religious and quite so. But, you know, I remember we were in the supermarket once, and it was a protest because there was a big protest about Californian wine.
Right.
Because they were spraying grapes all the year round, and all the little El Salvadorian workers were, you know, being born with cancers and all the things. Yeah. So we're trying to stop the spraying while the people are working in the fields. So we're in this supermarket, and this woman walks out with a trolley, and she's shoplifted the whole thing. So Martin goes up and says, look, I'll pay for the trolley, you know, and don't prosecute. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, sir, we can't do that, you know. And then, so he grabs my hand and he says, this is a place of injustice. Mark, pray with me. So I'm like, oh, crumb. You know, so we drop to our knees, both drop to our knees, and then he starts to say the Lord's Prayer, you know, our Father in heaven. And I go like, okay, well, I'm good with the words, I reckon.
Yeah.
Up until halfway through, I go, I just have a white room moment. Where I know, yeah. So I just instead, I just go, yeah, praise the Lord. And Marty's like, yeah, the spirit's strong. It was just like, oh, God, let me get out of here. You know? So, yeah, that was a kind of cheeky old Marty Sheen.
Did the Lord get away?
No.
She's still in prison. Yeah, no. Good.
Yeah, so.
Well, what was the idea behind the book? Like, what was...
I was always interested in politics. I really loved the actors who were kind of, you know, those 70s and 80s were quite... driven by quite a lot of actors getting involved in politics and stuff. And you'd had this sort of polarity of somebody like Charlton Heston with the NRA. He was very outspoken and quite right-wing. And I just was interested in the other story. You know?
Yeah.
And Susan Sarandon was, you know, bright, articulate, really.
Did you speak to Jane Fonda?
No, I didn't. I couldn't. I was sort of like, I know.
Yeah.
Get that.
Well, it's not too late.
No, indeed.
It's not too late.
No.
Well, Marlon Brando, of course.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it would have been great, but nobody got to Brando. I don't,
no.
You know, he was just.
But that would potentially have been something of an inspiration to you to have.
100%.
Because he won the Academy Award, didn't he?
Yeah,
was
that's
that
right.
for Apocalypse Now, or was it for. Yeah, and had. I can't remember her name, but a member of an American Indian tribe accepted the award on his behalf, or didn't accept the award on his behalf, because he was protesting the treatment.
And it was just and that for me was the beginnings of when I really kind of was interested about what Hollywood was up to, you know. And it feels like it's taken a totally different trajectory now. Although the Me Too movement, I guess you would have to say that's the thing that's brought. Its own, you know, the own industry, its own industry into some sort of
light. Then to have like this Jonathan Glazer speech at the just completed Academy Awards, and then a fairly mild mannered speech and very carefully worded. He's a Jewish American director who won the Academy Award, speaking about, you know, conflict in the world, quite generally, and now there's 9 million people that have signed you know, some letter saying that he's a horrendous human being. So it's still some work to be done.
A lot of work to be done.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, though, so that you would give up acting.
Yeah.
But that you, that it's obviously still in you.
Well, no, then I came back from America and I owned a restaurant, two restaurants in Covent Garden.
I'd imagine, Mark, that you'd be very, very good front of house.
Yeah, that's all they did with me. They just stuck there and kind of like, run, parrot, run. it was a great time because a lot of my friends, at the end of the road, they were doing Carousel, which was a musical theatre. And I remember one night we were desperate for customers because it was a new little restaurant. And this guy, Clive Rowe, came in, who was a black guy with an amazing voice. And he was like, Mark. I said, Clive. And he goes, I'm singing. I'm in Carousel down the end of the street. I said, well, bring all the actors in. Yep. Bring all the actors in and we'll do a lock-in. So, it was 11 o'clock closing. Remember the old 11 o'clock closing? Yeah. So they came in and suddenly we became this little bolt hole.
Right.
For speakeasy, for kind of like, you know, for the actors and the thing. And then the actors, of course, bringing the musicians in. And then we had Oasis and Oasis Number One Party there and Blur were all. So it was all at that time.
Really?
Yeah, it was. Freaking great and Pulp and
well,
so that was quite
already impressed by the band, but you know,
but this is the thing because I had a vague recollection that you were in restaurants, it was a vague thing,
I thought you were just a kitchen hand,
Many people said I should just be there,
put him out the back. Well, the Gallaghers are two of my favorite human beings in the world,
Well,
so I would be
both of them are. They give a lot. There's a lot of front, but they're very, very funny. And when you have a restaurant and you are front of house, all they want to do is just have a good time.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is give them a good time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, and it was private, and it was easy, and it was, you know. So they went to a place where they weren't known or overly known, and we just gave them a good time. It was great.
Yeah, but that's right in line with you. I imagine Mark in his 20s, not unlike Mark in his early 30s now. You would have been having a ball.
Yeah, it was great. And then, of course, you know, But you're running it. I was running it
because you owned
it. Crazy, yeah. I was running it with a, and I we owned the business in a building that was owned by a crazy Dutch guy called Fred Zoidak, who was a, a wickedly brilliant human being, but partial to some white powder. And, just, and of course, it, the two don't sort of work hand in hand that well, you know. So there was a lot of partying and a lot of wild nights.
Yeah,
and, but there was money missing, and you know, as a businessman, you got to go like that's just not viable.
And that, but that's also the part. It's the worst thing about the business, isn't it? Is the business side of it, because
that's right.
you've got the work thing, the thing that you're trying to do, that's the fun bit. But there's all this other shit that you've got to be making sure you're taking
and
care of.
And, you know,
wages, sometimes tax.
Stock.
You know, God. And then the Poetry Society of Great Britain were redoing the building around in Betterton Street. And they came to me and said, look, we're thinking of maybe doing a restaurant. Would you like to open the business here? And I was like, yeah, I'd been to a couple of those when I was living in New York, and the poetry cafes had restaurant upstairs and sort of poetry performance places downstairs, you know. I said, that'd be quite a cool idea, you know, just do a little sound. So we opened that, and I found this little crazy Canadian chef who was also partial to the white powder.
Was anybody not partial to the white powder,
though?
It
was the 90s.
So this is the 90s.
Well, I think, you know, as much as I don't want to put cast aspersions across the industry that is beautiful catering, it's, you know, it fits quite nicely because it's long hours and it's long time. It's long, it's, you know.
But across the board, right? It's actors, it's the arts, and it's all of that.
It's all of that. And I think, but the Poetry Society, you know, they were connected to.
Are poets mad on the gear, Mark?
No, I don't think they poets are mad on just a piece of soup and a bit of bread.
Yeah.
And they come in and, you know, go like, we're trying to run a restaurant here, mate. Can we share the soup?
Yeah.
Two spoons. No, you fucking can't.
Yeah.
But we had the chef, Chris, was a genius, and we had four starters, four mains, and a couple of desserts, and changed the menu sort of 2-3 weeks, and he just was, he could just match things together, flavors together, and was just superb. So we got these amazing reviews from the Evening Standard and the Independent, and, you know, all these kind of things, like, and suddenly couldn't, you know, didn't have enough room to kind of have the bookings. But I'd come back to New Zealand and a couple of times during that period and gone, I need to come back here. You know, I love London, but oh my God, I'm sort of burnt. I was burnt out with the restaurant.
How old were you at that point?
Oh, so this is sort of 95, 94.
Right.
So, you know, 21. And I came back and was like, I'm done with the restaurants. So I sold up, got out.
That's interesting that you came back to New Zealand when you'd left it. A pretty young age.
Yeah, left 16. At 16, yeah.
And your family had gone back to the UK as well.
Did your mum and dad, were they still over in England?
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think there was those formative years, 8 to 16, is a lifetime in the age of growing up. And I just think, you know,
it was your whole life again.
Yeah, and I sort of missed that. There's a thing about New Zealand that is just that anything is possible. And it wasn't like that in the UK. As an actor in the UK or trying to do things in the UK, whether that's the class system, it's just harder.
Mm.
It's just harder for access. And sometimes people get let through the door, in they come.
Yeah.
But it's like going to a club where you go, sorry, mate, you're wearing jeans.
Yeah.
And then you turn up the next day and you're not wearing jeans, you're wearing your trousers. And sorry, mate.
Yeah, that's
jeans
right.
Only.
Yeah.
But also there's a lot more people in the UK trying to get into the club.
That's right. And I just think there's a real advantage about being this far away from everything else.
Right.
I know there's disadvantages in that, but there's a lot of advantages about being so far away. You know, we could just do our own thing.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know. So when I came back, there's a whole gap of that after the restaurants because then I had a web design agency, which was.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Internet first started.
96.
Really?
So we started in 96. I went to see a friend of mine, Paul Bailey, who was.
Can I just say I'm thoroughly enjoying that?
Yes. I'm totally agree.
Well, he was wanting to be an opera director. wasn't gay, so it didn't kind of like,
it's never going to work.
It was kind of not going to work for him. Anyway, you just go like, the gay mafia was going,
right.
Know, it was,
yeah.
Again, well, it's the any mafia, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You know, but especially in opera. So it was just, he was having a difficult time. And he said, he went to LA to see his brother, and he said, oh, I'm doing this thing called HTML. I was like, blank. Again, yeah. Front of house guy. Okay, like, yeah, what is that? And he said, oh, come to this company, Stylo Rouge. I'm working there. And Stylo Rouge made album covers. They sort of designed album covers, you know.
Yeah.
So right. It was, you know. And he was designing Jamiroquai's album cover and making Jamiroquai a website.
Right.
And he was like, what is that? So it's based on his Ferrari. So, you know, 1, 2, 3 was all that was there.
Yeah.
Was the kind of navigation system. And he said, look. And I looked at it, I was like, this is going to change the world. This is like, wow. And I was like, well, why don't I get the clients? You do the coding and form a little business. And so we did. And
right.
Motion Pixels was born. And so all my old clients from the restaurants, you know, the advertising agencies and the kind of PR agencies and all that, all those people were like, okay, this is outrageous. This is great. What can we do? We can get, you know, disseminate information quickly around all the stuff that you know the net for. And it just took off. We went from three of us when we got Tim, to 25 of us in 18 months.
Jeez.
Did the Millennium Bug campaign for the British government. I remember turning up on my bike.
The
Y2K. Yeah, which is a total eye-opener. You know, because they're going, what's the quickest way to get information out? And we go like, we're over here. It's called the web.
Right.
So we turn up with my bike shorts, and I'd ride to 10 Downing Street and get on the bike into the cabinet with a bag. Right. And like, who are these guys?
You were at 10 Downing Street talking about...
Well,
at
10 Downing Street, the offices.
Yeah.
Because there was four advertising agencies, two PR agencies, us.
Yeah.
And to get the information, because they realised it was a huge problem.
Yeah.
And
not, as it turned out.
Well, it wasn't, because they did the work.
Right.
Because when they first turned it off, everything went like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it would have been an actual problem.
Right.
Yeah. So there was a. Anyway, and we did the first live. So we got lots of music clients as well.
Yeah.
So we did Simple Minds website and did the first live internet broadcast with Simple Minds.
How'd that go?
Poorly.
As a result of their content
I would say it was all their fault. No. Sorry, Jim. We were all working out. Because we'd gone from to fiber to 125 to then to, you know, fast internet. But it was still, compared to what we have now, you know, it was just slow. So getting streams to people and getting stuff down the line was kind of a tricky business. But then the crash happened. Oh, my God. So year 2000, it all goes through. And we had about 4 or 5 clients that were venture capital backed, and crash happened, and overnight the money stopped. It was like, hi, yeah, you haven't got any more, we can't pay bills, we can't do this. And so suddenly we were like in a situation where we were just had to lay off staff, had to lay off everybody. So we went back to the three of us, but we had this proprietary software called MySite, which is basically a content management system that you could update your own websites. Great. So nobody had to pay for updates, because we knew that ship was kind of like make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
Because we were making them and updating them and charging them for that. So this content management system gave the power back to them. So I said, well, I'm going to go to New Zealand and take my share of the I'll take South Pacific.
And
I'll come down and do that. And so I did, and came down, moved to Piha. Bought a little place out there and kind of did that for a little while. But, you know, I was sort of burnt out a bit with selling websites as well. But we did it. Then, of course, I met my wife. We had kids. And I looked after the kids for a couple of years. And
where'd you meet your wife?
At a party.
Yeah, of course.
What a
you
surprise.
Did. You're burnt out, but not that burnt out.
I was burnt out, but not for you, darling. And, you know, I fell in deeply head over heels in love.
How long have you guys been together?
21 years now.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And then poor old Peter Feeney came to me and said, look,
As he does.
As he does. We're auditioning, because he's godfather to my daughter. So he goes, look, we're auditioning for the show Amazing Extraordinary Friends. And there's a guy in there who we want you to audition for called Tony Baratoni, who's a bit like a Ray Winston-y kind of, you know.
Sure.
All right. So it's like.
Who you got to act with later.
Yeah, later. So I auditioned. I've not done anything for 20 years, man. It's like crazy. So I auditioned for that and got it.
Right.
And I remember ringing and saying, what do I do? What do I do? I've never been on a film set.
Yeah.
So it was my first acting gig.
How old were you at that point?
37, 38?
Yeah.
38, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but of course, I was just going, well, it's money for the family. So yeah. I didn't really get out when I get there. I had no idea. You know, I'd get on and I'd start speaking. They'd go, no, you got to wait for action. I was going, I really do know that. I just don't. Yeah. I really do know that. I know that. So it was kind of, you know, it was just, but I had a great time. And really that sort of thing of my career is built on going, not really expecting a career.
But what was it that you've got this thing in you when you're so young that you've got this passion for acting and you sort of feel like you've hit a roadblock when you're over in London to then have that come back into your life?
Totally. It was like, I mean, it's the biggest surprise.
And knock on your door.
And knock like on that. My door. You know, it was a complete utter surprise. And I kind of want to sort
which is, and can I say that's the same for Karen and it's the same for me. Yeah. Literally, it's somebody else.
And then we've done well.
Yeah. You know what, isn't it amazing, though, that somebody else sees something in you and says that. 100%. That's happened to all three of us at this table, that it took somebody else.
100%. And I think the thing is about that also, there's that level of when you don't want something as much as you do when you know, I really wanted to be.
Holding on too tight.
I wanted to hold on to, and you know, that whole thing of letting go of something. And it becoming back to you if it's meant to, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's hard for actors because you're always waiting for somebody else for that, you know? Somebody always.
It's not your call.
It's not. Yeah. Unless you do something like this or make your own work or try and get it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what we're trying to do, I guess, in this kind of thing and around us with people that we like working with, and, you know? Because it's hard. It's hard. It's hard here. It's hard everywhere to get work. But, yeah, so that was full sort of circle.
But what was it? So then, what's the pathway? You do that. How do you feel after that first day?
Then you go like, wow, this is great.
Yeah,
you know. And then you got to go and do auditions, and that's like, ooh.
Well, that is interesting as well because, of course, Tina, what was she doing for work then? Because
she was at Shorten Street.
Right.
Yeah, so she was just producer at
and this Shorten is, Street. This is Mark's wife, Tina McLaren, so that's interesting that you come back to the other side of the world and the person that you settle down with is in that world.
Totally.
And is that an accident?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, you know, and that's kind of, it was, you know, because that was no intention.
No.
Of, you know, you just meet who you meet.
Yeah, right? 100%.
And, it kind of, and then you fall in love and that's it. And so we've been quite a good little team in the sense that,
well, if you had met a butcher, you know, and she, you know, you probably wouldn't be acting.
He probably would have brought butchers back into fashion, knowing Mark. I feel like he's got the power.
Oh, he's like,
yeah.
In front of house.
Again, I'd have put sawdust on the floor and just a little thing. Hey, one of those little sort of, you know.
But you come back, you hook up with Tina and, of course, then all her world is creatives and actors and Peter Feeney. And,
And great people, you know. So it was nice to be back in that conversation without – and, you know, there's a little bit of imposter syndrome, I'm sure, you know.
Oh,
you
know, we all do.
But it's that sort of thing of going, well, the pressure doesn't feel as great about it all.
Right.
Here. You know, it feels like we're all trying to do good work and that's – and I just got lucky with projects, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be anywhere without Philly DeLacy, you know, I mean,
was she mates with Tina? That's you met her through Tina, or was that?
No, that was sort of separate. I auditioned for the South African doctor, you know, in Bloodlines.
Bloodlines. Now,
which took a long, long, long time for them to cast me.
Right.
So,
can I say that we're the first time?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I ever saw you was in Bloodlines.
Right.
And... You know, we in New Zealand, the way that we work is we don't make original content, or certainly it wasn't the case for many, many years, and it's sort of getting away from that now, but it was very much historical event of the year, and that would get turned into. So it was Rage, which was the apartheid thing, and it's Cave Creek, or pretty much any time more than one person dies, we're making a TV movie out of it. And Bloodlines was one of those. And I remember seeing that. And I don't even think I watched the whole thing, but I remember, I can still remember this now. I remember you coming down the stairs. There's a scene on the stairs and it was sort of moving between rooms, but seeing you and just going, who the fuck is this guy? Just an absolutely
fat,
unbelievable.
Well, how did he get a job?
Take a compliment, man. Like, an unbelievable. I just thought, this guy is unbelievable. Performance, the look, the you know, an absolute psychopath this guy was, fastest conviction in New Zealand's history. And we'll get into more of the detail about it, but I just I can still remember seeing you, and that's pretty rare for a New Zealand actor. And and obviously you've gone on to do incredible things, but what was the process, and tell us a bit about that.
I guess when I'd read the script, it was it was such an incredible, terrible story.
Can you tell us a background?
Yeah,
of it?
So it's a South African. Well, he was a.
So you're a doctor?
Yeah, he was a clinical psychologist at Otago University, but had completely forged all his documents and all that kind of stuff. So he wasn't at all, and he decided to murder his wife, thinking that the authorities were so stupid over here that they wouldn't get it and would have got away with it. Would have got away with it too.
If it wasn't for you, kid.
Yeah. So he poisoned her with insulin. But then, you know, said she was Jewish, so he had to be buried straight away, couldn't do an autopsy, all that kind of stuff. So, and, you know, it's a terrible story of a man who is just bereft of any kind of empathy or caring. And I think and you kind of, without sounding perverse, but you kind of, that's a great space to find yourself in as an actor. It's just so far away from where you usually stand. And it was just such a well-written script, and it just galloped along, and there was just lots of opportunity to explore all of that characterization and what that was all about. So, you know, and he fakes cancer, so he shaves off his eyebrows and his hair, and he's, you know, he does all this kind of thing. So there was a lot of dramatic, you know, effect through the show, it being a film. So it was, I read it, I was like, wow, this is a part that doesn't come along in a lifetime, you know. And I think it was one of Peter Berger's first films. So he was really, you know, thorough. And it just took its own momentum, really.
What had you done up until that point that made you think that you could?
I had no idea. I mean, no. I think the thing about having no preconceptions about what I could or couldn't do.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of went, you've just got to throw you. I'm just the one, I'm just going to throw myself completely head over heels into it.
I think that is a thing. If you don't expect to have been doing something, like, you know, people ask me, like, oh, yeah, because I don't know that I can't yet.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's like, a lovely place to be in, you know, in a situation, because you're not then kind of going, you know, that comes later, right?
terrified to do anything. I don't do anything.
Yeah. So how did then you get the role? It was... Lots of yarns.
Yeah, lots of auditioning, lots of...
Did you ever say that African accent?
Yes.
Can you still do it?
I can do it, yes.
It's a hard one to do. Well,
it is quite a hard one to do. But the problem is with that is I'm also from Joburg.
Oh.
So it's quite a different accent from
Cape
Town. From Cape Town.
Yeah.
And I had a mate in PR, Dave Boyce, who was like, that's a pretty good accent. I'm from Durban, and it's a pretty good Joburg accent, mate. So, yeah, it was kind of, and that helps, you know, because if you could, the accent was, you can't do
you
a bad.
You seem like you're quite good at accents in general, though. Yeah, even I just like accents, throughout this conversation, I've heard a number of them.
Yeah.
Have you always had that? How do you?
That is, I'll tell you what that
Mike
is.
Mike and I are both very good at accents.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's traveling.
Yeah.
You know, every 3 years we moved, and you fit in if you can, you know, and it also, it's a tool for making people laugh. Isn't
yes.
It? You know, so. And if you make people laugh.
That's right.
I mean, you know, they already laugh when I walk in the room, but, you know. So when I start doing the accents, yeah. But it's, I quite like, you know, I love accents.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives you it's access a good way, to, yeah. It gives you an access to a character to, you know.
And you won, I think you won Best Actor for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it must have been pretty much off to the races because you are one of New Zealand's most prolific actors. And it's a pretty incredible to come back
much
at
to
it.
The chagrin of Peter Feeney.
Yeah.
And Shane Cortez.
Yeah, that's right. It's, but yeah, have like very, very highly consistent work and voice work as well.
Mm.
And I guess your accents will help with that too. But it's that it must be a nice place to.
I think, and also his demeanor.
Oh, and his skill as an actor. I mean, like, because then you do you. What are the highlights? Like, I was looking through your IMDb, cursing you.
the problems of being an actor, huh? other people's success.
No, at all. Like, yeah, I mean, I love watching you, and yeah, it's always any time you turn up, I'm happy. You know,
yeah, well, I'm the same with you. I mean, without you know,
well, you're not happy very often. <you
know? laughs> it's the quality. But you look at something like Wellington Paranormal, and you know, it doesn't happen very often.
No.
That you have a success, an international success from a New Zealand show. And I know that was, you know, it was the boys and stuff, but that, you know, you two held that show and have consistently got, you know, rave reviews.
Yeah.
It's been a great, you know, thing for you, both your careers.
Oh, yeah. You feel it's just a feeling of pure luck. You just feel so lucky.
And it comes around, right? It comes around. And so lots of people go, oh, how? And you go, well, it is. Lots of it is luck. Lots of it is being in the right place.
Well, luck gets you through the door, right? Luck gave us the opportunity to do what we do in the shadows.
Yeah.
But I think we were right. I mean, I think the casting was spot on, I guess.
Yeah.
And luck will give you the opportunity, and then hopefully your ability will keep you in the room.
I think it's just our chemistry, not our ability.
Not our ability, but mostly chemistry.
Well, that is true, right? Because the chemistry, you know, in a buddy kind of
100%
series, you've got to be able to play off each other. I mean, if you hated each other at the end of the day,
we've said it. If either of us were acting against anybody else in those scenes, we would not be here.
I was thinking about it when I was coming in because they do remind me of the sort of old English comedies.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of got tongue in cheek. Where can we go to next? Yeah. Who are these characters that we're going to bring in each week?
Yes.
You know, and I think that's the
Monster of the Week.
You know, Ghost Cop. You know, it was so ridiculous that it was actually completely, utterly watchable. And I think that's, you know, that's tribute to you both and tribute to the writers and the team that just goes, right, let's actually kind of. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it was a pleasure to be on that.
It was really fun having you there.
It was really great.
But you did Tracker. And you did Tracker with Ray Winston.
And Tim
Morrison. You're New Zealand's Ray Winston. That's always been my vibe. How was it working with him? Because he is a legend.
He is totally a legend. But he also could be, you know, you never know, do you? You could go like, oh, is he going to be an arsehole?
Yeah.
Is he going to be one of those English actors who I might have worked with in The Hobbit who were definitely arseholes?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Which ones are they? What are their names?
I've got some for these.
Yeah, I know. I think you know, don't you? Yeah. Anyway, so Ray comes in. So I'm on this boat, you know, going down, the boat goes down to the end of the lake,
and,
you know, sitting there and reading a script. And this woman comes up to me and goes, oh, are you an actor? Well, actually, yes, I am. I'm just doing a show.
God, I can't get a minute to myself.
Yeah, oh, for goodness sake. Would you like my... No. And she goes, oh, yeah, my husband's an actor. I was like, oh, yeah, who's that? Ray Winston. And I was like, oh, jeez, I'm learning the scene that I'm just about to do with him. So we're laughing. She's laughing. Yeah. So I get to sit the next day and he goes, Mark, can I have a word? I'm like, yeah, Ray, yeah. You flirting with my wife? And that was it. We were off to a absolutely flying start. And it was just... And just got on.
Yeah.
Just really got on.
Well, would be birds of a feather, I imagine. Yeah,
we were kind of, you know, we used to call him 88 and 8 because he had 97 fights, won 88 of them, and lost 8. I can imagine the 8 that he lost to. Who were they? There must be horror story of people, you know, but he was an amateur boxing,
right.
You know, king. So he's like, so he had quite a... You know, quite a few stories. But
is he South London? Where is he from?
He's West, East London.
Right.
Yeah, West Ham.
Yeah, he's a presence, and he's in one of my... I'm not sure. Karen's not a big one for watching things.
Right.
But there's a film called Sexy Beast,
which is totally superb.
It's just the most ridiculous, insanely great film.
It is.
Ben put it on my list of things.
Ben Kingsley on the plane.
Yeah, put it on your list. That movie, Ray Winston is a retired gangster. He lives in Spain now, and he just spends his whole time going out for dinner and drinking with his wife and his mate, and, you know, another couple there, and he's got a pool and he's just sunbathing, and that's his life, you know, he's out. But then Ben Kingsley turns up and tells him he's got to do another job, and Ben Kingsley is an absolute psychopath, and you're just like...
Brilliant.
Like, as an audience member, you are just going, oh, my God. Did Jonathan Glazer direct that?
Yeah.
Who we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And... they finally get rid of him, and he gets on the plane, and you're like, thank fuck. And he sits down on the plane, Ben Kingsley, and he lights a cigarette. And he's smoking on the plane, and the air hostess says, you've got to get off the plane, you can't smoke. He goes, fuck off. And then he gets thrown off the plane. So then he goes back to the house. Oh. And you're just, as an audience member, you're just like,
Please go home.
So great.
Yeah.
So he must have... That was a pretty big get. Who produced that?
It was the guy who directed it. Was the guy who directed Robin Hood, the series? So it was not
a great claim to fame.
No, Harvey Harrison was the DOP, and Harvey could see that I was... I don't know whether he saw that I was good or not, but he just gave me little pointers. He goes like, Mark, don't blink when you turn left to have a look at, because he just went, it's just more, more powerful for you, because you've got to be this horrible kind of guy, you know, just all your power is in if you don't blink. And I go, I'd never been taught any kind of that stage screen craft, you know, and he just did things, and he said, it might feel unnatural, but it looks great on camera.
Yeah.
So he was really...
Well, it's a tension breaker, right?
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting stuff.
And that's often they'll often use that as an edit point. When somebody blinks, that will be the point where they'll cut to a different shot.
And, you know,
shot.
You don't know all that as actors, because you don't get taught that kind of stuff, but... or possibly you do, but I didn't. and then there's Tim too. And Tim is, you know, he's like a powerhouse, Tim. And so the two of them together with this character that I played, you know, who's kind of the searching Tim down. Mm. You know, it was a great experience, totally brilliant experience. And Emma Slade produced it. Of course, Emma's been, you know, gone from strength to strength, really.
Yeah.
Very good. Really.
She's great.
She produced Separation City, which is the first thing I ever did.
New Tuesday,
yeah.
Which I saw just recently and just totally loved.
New Tuesday? Yeah. It's insane.
It is. And I was like, it's so...
Tell your story, Karen.
Yeah.
Your story about New Tuesday.
The one where I was running down the mountain?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, very quickly. There was the scene when Jermaine's, you know, been in the lake and then storms down the thing.
Yeah.
And so we have to run after him in a bit of a panic, obviously, with our hats and our woolly hats on and our shoes on, sorry. And then in my head I was pulling Morgana, who was my partner, rain running. And I watched the film and she was pulling me because I'm not a very fast runner. But anyway, I was running, and then Jodie Rimmer was running next to me, tripped over.
Yeah.
And came just like tits, everything up. And I just like, and I remember just thinking, that is so, looked hilarious. But I was like, the camera's right there. Don't laugh, Karen. Be professional. I was like, okay, just keep running. So I just kept running. And I was like, and then, but then I could hear this, then someone started clapping. I was like, why is someone clapping? Like, this is gonna, sound is going to get so mad. We're going to have to do this whole thing again because of this idiot that is like clapping. And I kept running and I was like, it's really in time. Anyway, and then I finally looked down and realised that I was clapping for myself with my own breasts. They're completely in time. And I was like,
what is that noise? What is that noise?
Who is doing that? Because they're going to be in big trouble. It's like, no. Yeah, so yeah, I'm going to do a stage show called The Sound of Two Tits Clapping at some stage.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. That's an outrageous
not everyone can do that, you know.
Yeah, it's a great film. I loved it. I thought I was lucky enough to see it. I think it was at the premiere.
Yeah.
And it was great in the crowd because it was really funny. And I'm not sure people got that it was funny in a more empty theatre.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right. I laughed a lot through. I wasn't expecting to at all. I didn't quite know how it would all work.
Yeah.
So it really surprised me. And I just went, oh my, I really fell in love with it. It was a cracking little film. Yeah, I do like Jackie though. She's
phenomenal.
She's bloody good.
Yeah.
Another show that I loved that you did was called Hounds. But you're sort of,
I'm only little in that
periphery.
Yeah, but that's the Download Boys.
How good was that show? Did you watch that?
No.
Hounds was a really, really sad thing because I think they only got one series.
They did.
And it was just cracking. Everybody was good in that. And that was
that's right.
Yeah.
How good an actor was he? Unbelievable.
Brilliant actor.
And it was, so they did one season, Karen, and it was on TV3 and they fucking buried it.
Yeah.
Like 10 o'clock on a Friday night or some shit. Yeah. Absolutely, just buried it.
Yeah.
Disgraceful. And I would never have caught it except for some reason I was home on a Friday night.
Yeah, right.
One particular week. And I saw
sad,
it. And
sad little man.
I know, no one's ringing me up. There must have been a reason. It must have been Crook. But I watched it and it is, without a doubt, one of the best shows we've ever made. It's fucking brilliant.
I totally agree.
Absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. It got nominated for Best Comedy at that year's New Zealand Film and Television Awards, it was then, and it won.
Yeah,
and it never got picked up for another series. Yeah, so best comedy. Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, it was some. They did go on to make Cover Band, which was not quite as.
No, well, that was the thing. It was, but to me, it felt like because Cover Band was broader.
Yeah,
it was a broader kind of comedy.
But also, I don't think we've ever seen those people on New Zealand television.
Dog racing. It was set in dog racing.
Greyhound racing.
Oh, right, yeah. I was just going to say what this is about anyway.
Really, yeah. I just thought it was an incredible show and I'm gutted. I got in touch. Yeah. I didn't know those guys, but I got in touch just to say how much I loved it.
Kind of taking the piss of, or just the humour that
it was just in Greyhound racing. It was very dry.
It was dry and just
super grounded.
And that thing I think we're beginning to do much better now, which is sort of situational comedies that are not sitcom. You know, it's not
American.
It's not American, but there's situations where you go like, imagine finding yourself in this. And, I've just worked on this thing called Double Parked.
So,
and that's, that's Antonio and Madeline Sami doing, playing lovers and having babies. And it's just, you 10 years ago, we'd never have made that.
Yeah.
And it's just, people are beginning to trust in that we can tell stories, that we can do comedies. I mean, again, Wellington Paranormal,
right?
You could look at that show going as a trailblazer. I look at, when we did High Road and all the kind of the web series and that kind of stuff. You know, we came after Auckland Days, and there was just good people writing good shows that about situations. You know,
and I want to cover that as well. High Road, because that was an insanely successful show. And that was back when they were called web series, right? There was.
Yeah.
And you were, because I ended up doing.
I was in a web series.
You were in a web series. Yeah, you were.
Yeah. And it was supposed to be with you, but then Paul Yates ended up getting your role.
Yeah, that's right. I had to pull out. Yeah.
Old Yatesy.
Yeah. Old Yatesy.
Stop acting Yatesy.
Him and Cohen Holloway.
Him and Cohen.
But that was, High Road was very much a trailblazer for. I did The Water Cooler.
Yeah.
And that was like, fuck, if we can get to the sort of thing what Mark's doing.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you came up with that idea. And
well, that was Justin Harwood next door. Yeah. So Justin lives next door to me in Pihau. He was bass player in The Chills, Luna, that kind of thing. Came up
oh,
with
Now, Luna's got Dean Wirrum. Yeah, as that's right. Yeah. I used to live with Dean's cousin, Mary Wirrum.
There you go.
Who is a human rights lawyer with Human Rights Watch. Yeah. And she won, I think she won a Nobel Peace Prize for her work banning landmines.
Yeah,
so I live with her on Oriental Parade. That
place. As you do.
Oriental Parade. So anyway.
Yeah, so Justin came up with this idea. Justin and I had set up the radio PIA.
Right.
In PIA.
Oh, so had you actually?
Yeah, we actually set up 88.1. And we just used to do ads for like Instagram. we found all the ads that we did. We were going to kind of, you know, the things was, I remember there was like, I'm tired. I'm lost. I don't know what to do. I think I'm addicted to PR radio. and they've got all these complaints from the old women of going, oh, you can't be, it's not funny. People are having trouble with this in this community with PR.
Just because you're not laughing doesn't mean it's not funny.
Exactly. Isn't that the point of view? Anyway, so we decided to take that, an old aged rock star, which sort of, it was an amalgam of us both, really.
Yeah.
Kind of going like an old aged rock star that comes and decides to open up a radio station in a caravan in PR.
Terry
Huffer, yeah. And I mean, it just sort of writes itself, and then you know, got a great cast. But
how did you fund that?
We made it for $150. We just funded ourselves. Yeah, right. You know, it was like, and then
you got your mates because it's sound. You know, you say, oh, we didn't pay.
But it was like that. You know,
you've got to have the proper sound. You've got to properly.
But everybody was kind of like, we'll do it because we liked it. And then you know, it was like that Wayne's World thing, where we got a call and we're like, we'd like you to give you $150,000 to make the next series. We're like, what?
Yeah.
To make High Road. And we're like, we got $150,000.
Is that New Zealand on air?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Jen
I remember
Rice loved it.
It.
Yeah. And then we were like, okay, well, so all of a sudden we could pay people. And
you won
and
the Web Series World Cup.
Yeah, we won the best web series in the world.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was crazy. I got all these little, you know, gongs from Santiago and you know, all these kind of weird places that go like.
We came 20th. We came 20th in the world out of 1,000, so that's pretty good.
Well,
it's a water cooler.
It's still on. I love the water. Yeah, the water cooler's great. But it's still on Neon.
But what was great about the way that you guys did it was you weren't because the durations were quite long. They were 15s and they were
17s.
Not super short at all.
Yeah.
So it was effectively you were making a TV show, and you were just saying, well, we're just going to put it out on the internet because we're not going to go jump through all the hoops and fuck around trying to make a full-on production.
And then you have the people in the
– they start chipping on about the script and all that. And that was the great thing about watercolor. You never got a note. You never heard from them. They just gave you the money.
Yeah, that's
right. That was
it. Yeah, and I think there was
it wasn't enough, but I appreciated it. You know?
No, I mean, in some ways we've done a disservice to our industry by taking the money and just making it because it's you know, now they think they can just get
work for $8 a day.
That's right. And it's you know, it doesn't kind of work that way. But now High Road I loved doing High Road. And, you know, I got up and, I'm set in 2 minutes.
And another thing that was a bit of a coup, and you probably won't know about this, O'Leary, the last season, Emma Thompson showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Emma Thompson was in it.
Well, we went
the
to
the Emma Thompson.
The Emma Thompson, not older. My Emma works at the Dairy and PR.
Yeah. I'm Emma Thompson from PR. not that one.
How did that come about?
So one of my close friends, Claire Wise, her brother, Greg, who's an old mate of mine, is married to Emma.
Oh.
As we call her, the dame, as we call her.
Good.
So, and I suggested to Justin, I said, wouldn't it be funny if Terry Huffer was actually Emma Thompson's brother? And they were just, you know, because she's got a sister. And I said, you know, and she goes, yeah, that's a fucking great idea. So is there any possibility? And I said, yeah, I think there might be. So I called Greg and I was like, look, we've done the series. We sent them the first, you know, series. And she just went, yeah, I'm in. I'm totally in. So we flew to the UK, went up to Hampstead, and literally in 3 hours did all that Emma Thompson scene. And, you know, Greg had been like, hey, why don't you take half an E? We'll have a quick. I don't say, oh, fuck it. Yeah. It's very Terry, our fellow. We might as well. Because he comes in and goes, like, oh, you were with the Thompson Twins last night. Oh, God, what's good? You know, and so there's a whole kind of thing that we have. And then she walks in and just tells me off. And, you know, it's that hilariousness around a brother and a sister's relationship that we've.
Unbelievable. And was there ever any approach to turn it into a proper TV show?
Yeah, well, we wanted to do a film.
Right.
That's what she wanted to do. She goes, you should make this into a film. And so that's still, you know, pending. But
as a script,
as my wife keeps saying, just give it up, okay? Just let it go. You're done with Terry now. Move on. Get over it. It's so like a producer, right? Just like, oh, yeah, burn. Take my heart out of my chest, cut it up and sing, and pan fry it.
Yeah, but this is the thing, though, when you've got somebody saying that, and she probably knows you well enough to know that if she's saying that, then you're not giving up shit.
No, exactly. Yeah. Well, the thing is, what I absolutely learned is everything that you do in your life can, you know, there's always kind of resurrections that you can make. You know, those interviews, I read them the other day because I'm, you know, writing some stuff at the moment, and I just went, God, they're still relevant. They're still sort of prescient, and they're interesting to read because of the people who I interviewed. So nothing sort of goes away. Mm. It just sometimes gets put to bed for
a little bit. Well, it is interesting, man. I wonder about that. If you could imagine being able to go back and talk to those people now, like present those interviews to them and say, I don't know if you remember, but I did this, and how do you feel about this now?
A second. Well, I thought exactly that. You know, it's almost podcasty, you know.
Yeah.
You could get them to do that. But, you know, we can talk about that afterwards.
Yeah, bloody good. I guess at some point we should talk about Wellington Paranormal.
Yes, sure, I guess we should.
You seen that?
<about it.
laughs> How was your experience on it? I think we had a pretty good time.
I'm going to tell you, it was absolutely punishing because it was five night shoots.
Yes.
So I don't know how in God's. I mean, you know, you come away from five night shoots and you're like, you're jet lagged, you're slightly sort of wobbly. You don't know whether you've seen the light of day and you kind of like just want to sleep through it. It was quite hard work.
Yeah, it's grueling.
But.
And it was fucking pissing down as well. Wellington, this is the thing. It's right, and you tell people about it, and you bang on about it, you know, really. But Wellington in the middle of winter at night.
Well, that was the only season we did in winter. So that's normally we did it over summer.
Mm.
And remember, we were in the tunnel.
Yeah.
For a long period, we were like,
yeah.
I'll tell you what I did think, though, is that because I didn't realize what an amazing comedian Marco was. I didn't realize
because
he's always playing the sort of he's always playing the sort of straight, but he's actually got this amazing, you know,
he's very funny,
the funniest guy, funniest guy. You know, and of course we have a, you know, I think us three have a natural kind of rapport. So it was also a lovely thing. It was when you go, there's nothing better as though than when you go into set and you go like working with the people that you go, oh, it's going to be easy.
It's going to be hard work.
Okay.
And it is such a fun thing, isn't it? I wonder if people even think about that. But just, you know, when I knew that you'd been cast, I was so excited about it. I was like, man, we get to do scenes with Mark. it is a treat because you bring those outside experience onto set and and you know, and you're a real, I mean, it's a bit of a soft word, but a naughty, you know, you're always fucking, you're trying to break each other up and
totally.
Fucking around and all of that. And you'll say horrendous things right on action.
Just
to try and.
The worst at that, though, is Cohen Holloway.
Oh, 100%.
He's unstoppable.
He is a horrendous human being.
How we love him.
How long did that facial hair take you?
Oh, my God. And remember, they stuck it with glue.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It did look amazing. It was quite extraordinary. But also I thought what was, and I said this before, but there's, you know, these characters that you can have a lot of fun with.
Yeah.
The guest characters were almost, you know, part of the fun of the show. Yeah. You know, when they'd come in and go like, what, now where are we off to?
Yeah.
You know? And it's also quite hard. You know, what you two do is very difficult. Actually, it's quite hard to improvise and be funny and do all that kind of thing in a period of filming like that because it's quite exhausting, you know. But you seem to both do it so effortlessly. So.
I think we've got amazing co-stars like yourself, but also
it is good fun, right? If you're not going to enjoy it, then you're definitely in the wrong business.
Yeah.
And like it's so stupid, isn't it? You, but I think if you've ever done any kind of acting. in New Zealand, you're not necessarily always doing the things that you want. That'd be the same the world over, right?
100%.
So when you get your hands on something where the writing's great and you're working with Jermaine Clement and you've got Paul Yates and these incredible writers and like Karen says, you get these guest stars coming in.
Who are just so fun and so
you're savouring. You're really savouring because it's a six-week shoot.
It's like kind of being at a party every night.
Oh, totally.
But it's hard, like you say, if it's pissing down and freezing cold.
Because that is true. You know, we often get roles and you're like, okay. This is just a kind of money
done
job.
This before.
Kind of playing that guy again.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it's ironic, though, that you were playing the old-fashioned cop and that you came and harassed people at the bar for sly grogging when obviously what we now know is that you used to do exactly that with you.
You used to be a sly grogger.
Well, I think, I'm a reformed, I'm a reformed sly grogger. So I just turned it right round 180 degrees. And
I cannot stand for this.
I wasn't invited. I'm not happy.
Did you have any malicious bells ringing at your old place in London?
Yeah. Oh, God, I don't know.
Malicious bell ringing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that sums it up, doesn't it?
I think this has been a very entertaining, very interesting chat.
Yeah.
I've very much enjoyed it.
It's been so lovely being here. And
the great thing about this chat has been it makes me want to talk to you more.
Oh, anytime.
See you next week.
Yes. Yeah. Part two. People will be going, no, my God.
No way.
It's funny.
Not at all. Well, I am so stoked that you came on. I love that you're on Wellington Paranormal. I love you as an actor and I love you even more as a human being. You're a great man, Mark Mitchinson.
Back at you, brother.
It's always a joy.
Thank you, brother.
Same as what he said.
Oh, stop it. All I can hear now is the breasts flapping.
Look, you've seen it. Oh, God.
I have. What is that noise?
Karen's coming.
Yeah.
Righto.
You can't finish on Karen's coming.
So there you go. Mike Mitchinson. Me? What do you think about that, eh?
I thought it was a fantastic chat.
It's nice, isn't it? I think maybe it's probably a more interesting way to. Well, I think maybe we have been doing that anyway. We talked to Marker about his background, didn't we? Corey as well. Just trying to remember. But it is interesting finding out about people like that. That was such a good yarn. I loved it.
It was fantastic. I'm gutted I forgot to bring up the movie that my friend made with him in it.
Human Traces.
Yeah, it was a very good film. Quite spooky.
It was a spooky film.
And had What's His Face in it as well.
Yeah.
He went a bit famous after that,
didn't he? He did, yeah. I'm looking at his Vinnie Bennett. That's right.
Not as good as Mark, obviously.
Oh, no, he's got a few years. Hey, thanks so much again for listening. That's it for this week. Thanks to composers Monica, Paul Yates and Jermaine Clement for letting this happen. You can follow Wellington Paranormal on our Instagram, Wellington Paranormal Podcast, TikTok at Wellington Paranormal Pod, YouTube at Wellington Paranormal the Podcast. My socials are at Mr. Mike Minogue for Instagram. My radio show is at Hauraki Big Show. Karen O'Leary is on Instagram at Karen O'Leary NZ. Leave us a review and give us a 5-star rating on your way out. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much. This podcast is recorded at Frank Studios in Ponsonby, Tamaki Makaurau. If you'd like to rent the studio, you can by getting in touch with me on my email, mike@frankmanagement.nz. And Wellington Paranormal, the podcast, is also brought to you by B2B Speakers, the corporate speakers company that brings the guests you hear on their hugely popular New Zealand podcast, Between Two Beers, to your event as an MC or speaker. You can choose from well-known champions like Mike Minogue, Karen O'Leary, Lee Hart, Kieran Reid, to low-key legends like Mike Minogue, Karen O'Leary, Dave Latelli, and Mia Mutu, and a whole lot more. If you've been blown away by any of the stories you've heard on their podcast, you can now share that inspiration with those you work with, or you might just want a funny bugger for your awards night. No matter what you need, B2B can help you out, and they're adding new guests every single week. Head on over to b2bspeakers.co.nz and let our guests make your night.
You're getting so good at reading it out.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not feeling 100% today either, but we'll get into that on a different episode.
Okay.
Frank Podcast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.